Hello and welcome to Dyslexia Explored. I'm Darius Nomdaron, your host. And today we've got an interesting young man, young compared to me. He's an ambassador for the British Dyslexia Association. He started his own clothing brand over the last couple of years. And before that, he ran his family business. Let me introduce you to Jake Posner. Jake, great to have you here.
All right, thank you for having me on the podcast. Excited to be here and discuss various elements of dyslexia and everything that, you know, the challenges that I personally face and probably or hopefully a lot of other people can relate to, and hopefully we can grow together and inspire one another.
Yeah, so you're 28 years old and you've gone through those school years, come out of those school years, starting to find your groove in life and business. And it's just going to be interesting to hear your dyslexia journey. And I kind of have to ask everyone what their sort of dyslexia journey here is on Dyslexia Explored. So for you, what was life like before you knew about dyslexia?
I don't really remember it. I was really young when I got diagnosed, about 8 or 9. So for me, recalling sort of memory before it is a bit difficult. But I do remember the sort of process of getting diagnosed dyslexia. I guess when you're that sort of age as well, you don't really understand it. You just know that you're tarnished with a brush. I'm sure that school has changed and the way that we look at dyslexia has changed in the 20 years since I was diagnosed. It did feel like you were just tarnished with a brush and, oh, Jake's going to struggle with reading, writing, spelling. I also struggle with numbers too. So I guess I have dyscalculia as well. So yeah, I've always remembered life with it.
So what was the wake up call? What kind of switched you on to dyslexia? How did it happen? How did you notice?
It was at school. Some of my teachers advised me to go to a learning support structure within the school organized. So I went there. I'm sure it was in like a lunchtime. We used to normally do them in lunchtime. So I went over to that sort of learning support extracurricular space. And we did some reading, writing, and some sort of, I remember we had to draw like lazy eights. I don't know why. We had to draw like figure of eights as a lazy eight. And then the school got in touch with my parents and we had to go through a dyslexia test. So it all stemmed from there.
Great. It's great to see that the school system picked it up. And so what was your biggest challenge then?
As a young kid, I always enjoyed going to school. It was always good. Like good fun. I loved the social aspects too much. And where I went to school, I was quite lucky with the sports side of things as well. So it kept me busy and it kept me out of trouble, the sports thing. And I remember the lessons were just difficult. And like when you're between the ages of 8 to 11, you have to do every single subject under the sun. And like I could just about read and write in English properly, let alone learning to read and write in French. I just didn't understand why I would need to be there. And at my school, for one reason or another, some of the cleverer kids, more academic kids, they also learned Latin. No idea why. And to me, I never quite understood it. Shouldn't we be focusing on something that maybe I actually need to learn? French is important. If you can talk two languages, amazing. If you can be bilingual, amazing. Fully respect that. But I couldn't. I felt like it was just a bit of a waste of time when there could be other things I could be doing that maybe I could learn more and be better at for future life.
Yeah. How did school end for you?
After year 8, so 13, I left the school that I was at because that was the oldest it went up to. I then moved into a secondary school for year 9 to year 11. And again, I had lots of fun. I played a lot of sport, did a lot of that kind of stuff. But again, I didn't really learn much. I learned the very basics of what you need to know for life. And I've done my GCSEs. I've got one GCSE, I've got PE. And that was the only GCSE that I got. I went into the exam with a guaranteed C, into the written exam, and I came out with a C. So how many marks I got in that paper, I have no idea. But it can't have been very many. And I remember I went to school in August to collect my GCSE results. And I went with one of my best friends and his dad. My mom and dad were away at the time. And so I went to collect my results. And I remember walking into where we were collecting them from. And my teacher that I got on really well with, who I would report to like daily, weekly, we'd have a good rapport. He was the head of PE as well. So we got on that front. And he was like, Jake, like, it's really not good. I was like, how bad? He was like, you're going to have to open them. So I remember opening them. And am I allowed to swear?
Yes.
Okay. And I remember opening my results and I was like, oh shit, that is not good. And I remember I just had that one GCSE. I think I got I think I've got a year of sciences, and I don't think a college is going to accept you either. So I was like, that's uni off the cards for definite. Not that I ever really planned to go to uni anyway. And that's college off the cards. So I left to my own devices, which is interesting.
Where are you in the world for our international listeners?
I am in North London in a small little village slash town called Radler, which is just outside of Watford. If you're a Premier League watcher, you'll know Watford are like a bit of a yo-yo club. They go up and down from the Premier League and they're just outside of London. And that's where I am. And I live on High Street now, just to the side, just discreetly tucked away, which is nice. And I remember walking down that High Street and knocking on a state agent's doors and asking for jobs. I was a 16-year-old kid, just the day of my GCSE results, and I was going to state agents asking for a job. I think some of the state agents were like, who the hell is he? Get out of here. What are you doing? And some of the state agents were like, I respect him for doing that. I ended up getting a job just outside sort of the heart of London in a place called Finchley, doing a state agency where I was an apprentice for a year and a half, was paid really bad money, £400 a month, working 6 days a week. It cost me more to get to work, to and from work, than what I was earning. So what I would do is I would get the overground train from Radnor to where I live now. I would not pay for my ticket. I would never pay for my train ticket because it was more expensive to pay for the train ticket every day than it would be to get fined on average once a week. So the fine, I would normally get caught once a week not having a ticket. The fine would be £60. But return travel there and back every day would be about £25. So I was like, you know what, I'll just get a fine. And that's what I did.
So you went to work, you did the estate agency. What happened after that? How did that go?
It was interesting. So when I was doing that, I also had a massive passion for DJing. And somehow or another, I was able to DJ in nightclubs at the age of 15, 16 years old. I have a good friend who he's a couple of years older than me, and he was already DJing in some of the nightclubs. I was like, look, I really want to DJ. Can you help? He was like, yeah, no problem. Come along with me to where I'm DJing. And he would DJ every Friday night. And I was just like a 15, 16-year-old kid just in a nightclub. I was like, how have I ended up doing this? And from there, I just sort of started DJing more. And he would get more gigs across the UK. And we would travel to Birmingham and Leeds and do all this fun stuff. So obviously coming home late at night or early in the morning and then going to work was a struggle. But I knew that I sort of had to do it. And I was lucky the estate agents were quite lenient with me. I'd be able to come in at maybe sort of 10, not agreed that I would, but if I came in a bit late, it would be okay. They'll get a full-time member of staff, £400 a month, who was able to do viewings, who was able to talk to people, who was able to sell, was able to use Rightmove, was able to send emails and do all the other stuff that apprentices had to do, whether that be like shredding paper or whatever else. I felt like I was quite competent in what I was doing, but it wasn't necessarily my sole focus, but I knew I had to do it.
Okay. And so let's talk about your dyslexia then. Where did you find, so there's pros and cons to dyslexia. There's the upside to dyslexia and there's downsides to dyslexia. Downsides are pretty obvious. We all know them. And the upsides are quite interesting to see how your brain's wired. Generally speaking, I'm a big fan of Dyslexic Advantage book, where they propose that some people have deficits in certain areas of their processing because that energy resource has been assigned to another area which has been boosted up and it's normally a higher level function. What's your kind of take on all of that and how have you experienced that?
I feel like I'm quite good at communicating with people and representing something that I am passionate about. I'm quite good at that. And I love to be creative. I love to explore. I love to see how things come together, whether that be in a color sense, whether that be whether like silver goes to blue or gray goes to blue and black with a splash of red and that kind of thing. Like I feel like I can see a picture and try my best to develop my ideas I have in terms of a creative sense. And everything that I try and do always comes from a storytelling narrative, whether that be if like I'm pitching my brand to a retailer, I feel that the brand story is the most important aspect of what we're trying to achieve. And I think that if you can tell a story in a certain way and you can bring your ideas to life in a creative sense, which I feel dyslexia really allows you to do, it's that different way of thinking, then I think that what you can create and what you can achieve is endless. Like you can, if you can always think of the next step, then I think you'll always be able to achieve something great. But at the same time, I struggle with organization. So while I'm thinking about the next step, I'm also thinking about, well, I'll be focused on, for example, making sure that the next designs are perfect and ready to go. But I won't have thought about packaging for these products. I wouldn't have thought about the operational side of things. I wouldn't have thought the financial side of things in terms of how much we're going to spend, how we're going to have to sell it, how we're going to have to make the revenues, how we're going to market it, and all this kind of stuff. Like, I wouldn't have thought about a marketing budget. So that kind of thing is always more difficult. And when it comes to getting the products in, I'm like, so how am I going to put this away? How am I going to store it? That kind of thing just doesn't register with me. But I think that as you grow and as something becomes more relevant, like there are more people willing to help instruct you within the areas you find hard. So what I would suggest is always reach out to people, because you're never going to know what answer you're going to get back. I've spoken to people that in a million years, I would never have expected to speak to. So I'd say that if you can get a good understanding of how your dyslexia benefits you, really go for it and don't give up and just keep pushing. And I think that you will find your way for sure.
So storytelling, fantastic. Yeah. Embedding everything in a story. In terms of the dyslexic advantage, they would call that narrative reasoning. Like you can think and understand things in stories, and you can help other people understand things in stories. And we are story creatures. We really want to understand things in stories. So if you've got that ability to embed everything and into a story, it really helps. So bring us up to the present. You're now British Dyslexia Association ambassador. What does that mean?
That means being able to be open to my story, my journey, to hopefully inspire others and tell a story, but also engage with the charity as well, share their good work that they do, the support that they offer to parents and children, and also attend any events that they have upcoming, which I really love what I'm doing. If I can help anyone, one person, if I can sit down with someone who's about to head into their GCSEs and just explain, or anyone older, anyone who's come out of school already and in their 20s and trying to find their way, I'm happy to do that. That's something that I really am passionate about. I've always wanted to be in a place where I can give back to other people. I see, I'm a big football lover, and I see professional football players. Sadio Mane, I'm a Southampton fan, so I've seen his journey along the road, and he's someone that really inspires me. He donates a lot of his wages to Senegal, building schools in Senegal to help his local community. And while I don't have money as like a football player does, and my business is very new, my cash is very minimal, I can't necessarily give back in a monetary way. But if I can give back in a way that I can help and advise and hopefully inspire, then that's perfect for me.
So tell us a little bit about your brand, what you're doing right now. You're designing clothes, and tell us a little bit about your latest venture.
Discuss sort of my two main loves in life briefly, but I have three overall, and that's music and fashion. Music and the DJing, I didn't make a career out of. I maybe could have pushed harder, but I don't think that it was something for me necessarily, as much as I love it. Football, I was never a good enough football player by any stretch of the imagination to ever go pro. So I knew that from an early age, like 13, 14, that was never going to happen. But I also spent a lot of time getting my coaching badges. So I have my FA level one, level two coaching badges. I did a lot of coaching as well for my local community club, which is Watford FC. I also did some training on Sunday mornings when I had the time as well. Get back to a community of where I attended football courses as a kid. And then my other love is fashion. My money would always be spent on clothing. I'd go and sell fears and I would just buy clothes. I'd love to put things together. I'd love to be the person who was like, oh, well, I found this brand and I love this brand now. And because they're doing X, Y, and Z, then my brand's been formulated a lot around dyslexia, been formulated around sustainability. And it's also inspired by perceptions of dyslexia and how high-end fashion and that luxury fashion can't be sustainable because it's not cool. And I think that's just a lie. And I look at a lot of fashion brands now and they're just constantly churning out products for no reason. And it's like, when does this stuff, like I'm talking about brand fashion houses that are hundreds of years old and have been founded on principles of well-made products. and they're now just churning out mindless merchandise. And I want to take a step back from that and focus really a lot on well-made pieces that's going to be a timeless design that's not part of necessarily a hype product, which is what you see a lot of nowadays, and put time and effort into creating something that's going to be good for our environment, that's going to be good for our supply chain, and going to be good for the end consumer. And ultimately, that's what I'm trying to achieve while incorporating my dyslexia into that.
It was funny, when I had young kids, 2-3 year old kids, my grandmother bought our daughter this coat, okay? And it was really expensive. And we were kind of, wow, we don't really want to be spending that much money on kids' clothing. She's going to grow out of it in the next 6 months. And she had bought it, and it was just this beautiful green fluffy jacket with sheep on it. And the amazing thing about it, though, was we handed it on to someone who handed it on to someone who handed it on to someone. And that it went through, I think, 12 different children until it came back to a friend of ours who had it on. And we were like, oh, wow, there's that coat. And then what happened was that when they were finished with it, we said, look, could we have that coat back so that we can give it to our cousin who had just been born? And they were like, yeah, sure. And there it was on this little one 20 years later. And we were like, wow, this is quality. This is what quality does. It just keeps lasting.
I 100% agree. It keeps lasting. It's also a story.
Yes, that's right. It's been through so many different children. And the thing is, it's just such a beautiful little design. The kids who had the coat loved it, appreciated it, and treasured it so that it kept going. So it's quite interesting to hear your approach. And so is that what you're aiming for with your clothes?
That's what I'm aiming for. I have clothes from other brands in my wardrobe. I haven't bought a winter jacket since I was 21. So that's like 21st birthday. So that's now 8 years I haven't bought a winter jacket for. I have other jackets that I've had since I was 18, 19 years old. So I've had jackets in my wardrobe for 10 years. And that really inspired me to create products. While yes, I understand they're expensive. And in a time like what we're in now, I don't know if people are going to invest in pieces. But for me, I know in myself, what I'm creating is the best possible item that I can provide for people. Then I feel that I've done my job in terms of sustainability while looking after my supply chain as well, which is just as important. My hero piece of my debut collection, the debut is hyphenated. There's a hyphen between the B and the U because it's broken down into syllables to reflect dyslexic thinking and spelling. So to reflect the dyslexic thinking and spelling, break it down into syllables, which is how I read and write. And this denim jacket has been made using new technology, which saves 99% water consumption. So we're saving about 9,500 liters of water for every denim jacket we make. And there's a lot of brands. If you Google denim jacket, eFlow is the technology that I'm using for this denim jacket. There's not one other company that pops up using this method. And the reason why I think as to why that might be is that number one, it's probably more expensive to produce using this new technology. And number two, I think that these luxury brands and luxury fashion houses that have been around for hundreds of years have built up clientele, and they maybe are scared to try something new in case the quality isn't the same to what their clientele are used to. So I do understand that side of things with the clientele. I think that we all need to be taking an active approach within how we're consuming and producing fashion.
Okay. This podcast is sponsored by DyslexiaProductivityCoaching.com, which helps you organize yourself creatively with a productivity system for Apple devices. So have you got a fashion design background? Did you go and get some training, or is this all kind of self-taught? How did it all come about? So give us a picture. People might be thinking, oh, he's going out and getting merch and putting a brand label on the top. Is that what we're talking about here? Or is it designing from the fabric up? Because very different.
Oh, designing from the fabric up. I wanted to do this in 2019 and I didn't have the cap, but my own personal capital, I didn't have enough. I remember I found an agent in Portugal in 2019. I went out to meet her. She introduced me to some manufacturers. And they all told me, right, their MOQs, minimum order quantities for what I wanted to achieve. I didn't have money. So I was like, right, put this one to one side and maybe revisit it when I can. And during lockdown in 21, so March of 21, I think it was, I had a literal dream that I met back up with my agent in Portugal and I was able to produce my clothing. And that was on a Friday night. The next day I woke up, got on my computer on my mum and dad's kitchen table and designed a logo. I had it all written down in my phone notes because I woke up in this dream, put it all in my phone notes with the brand name, how I wanted to do it. And Monday morning, I got back on the phone to Laura, who's my agent in Portugal. She's honestly an amazing lady. When I go and visit her, she's like, I'm a Portuguese mom. We have that kind of relationship. She's great. And I was like, Laura, like, how's things going in Portugal with the pandemic? I've been reading up a lot about fashion and supply chain, about how brands are wary about how much they're going to invest in products and how much they're going to order. Is there a space for me? It's like, look, give me 24 hours. Let me come back to you tomorrow. Sorry. So she came back to me. It's like, now's the chance. If you want to do it, you got to go now. Okay, let's go. So I mocked up the designs on my iPad. I sent her my concept sheet. So a concept sheet is putting everything together in an Excel spreadsheet. So you'd put together like the measurements of where you wanted your logo to be. Like, it's quite a complex thing. And being dyslexic and with my organization skills from dyslexia, it's a bit tricky, but I've got better at them as I've learned. So submitted my concept sheets. And all stems from that. I don't have a background in fashion design. I don't have any sort of qualifications or been taught anything. I've just always taught myself my own things, my own way of doing things. It's just something that I've always done. I don't know how, I don't know why, and I just saw him from there and it stemmed on from there.
How many pieces did you order?
So in the t-shirts, I had to order 330 units. In the hoodies, I had to order 220 units. In the joggers, I had to order 150 units. Caps had to order 100. Socks had to order 100. Denim jackets, 150. For me, it's not been easy to get the money together. I've been scrambling. I've got a bit of debt on credit cards, but I'm willing to do that because I'm so passionate about what I'm doing. If I was, one thing I hate is gambling. And if I was gambling on my credit cards and getting myself in debt with credit cards, because of gambling, I'd be very worried. I'd be an anxious mess. But because I have so much faith and so much confidence in what I'm doing, I'm willing to take that risk. And if it doesn't work, I can say I gave it my absolute best shot and I'll have to just find ways of paying the debt. But I'm hopeful that it's going to work.
How's it been going on sales? How are things going?
When I first started, I didn't have as many products as I have now. So I was able to do a bit of marketing. I was able to have a bit of a budget. So I was generating sales. Over time, it's been harder for me to advertise because I haven't had a marketing budget because I've invested in new stock and new pieces to build out a full range of products. But I've been going about marketing in either an old school way or a non-authentic way to how we view marketing nowadays. Like nowadays, we view marketing as sign up to Facebook, pay Facebook some money, and job done. We'll get people to our website. Yeah, you can get people to your website. And I think that if you're selling garden furniture, for example, for people to put out, it's much easier to get sales on your website. Fashion, in my opinion, is very subjective. And I've always looked at fashion that way, whereby it's the first thing that people see about you and how you communicate yourself to the outside world. You have to be very strategic within fashion, I believe. And you have to have a brand that people want to associate themselves with. So in October, 8 times, I think, I was going out in Soho in central London, which is where a lot of brands I am inspired by have their sort of flagship London stores. And went to Soho. I sit up at a closed rail and just sit on the street of Soho outside these shops that I would love to one day be out with my own store within their locations, next door to them or across the road. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. What have we got to lose? Nothing. I've got a council going to tell me to move on. And I was out there for best part, probably 12 hours a day. It's much harder for me to do it now because of the weather. And everyone was saying they liked the brand. Whether or not they were just being nice to me because it was in my face, I don't know. But they are the comments that I had. And for me, that meant a lot. For me, that showed proof of concept. And it also showed that I'm on the right path to hopefully being able to achieve something, which would be great for me. And I'd love to prove those sort of teachers wrong. I'd love to prove those sort of family members wrong. I'd love to prove parents, friends, my friends' parents wrong, who would always be like, oh, Jake's a lunatic, Jake's hyper, Jake's crazy. I'd love to just prove those people wrong. And then I also really want to get into the right retail spaces, because again, I think being in the right retail spaces gives you much more credibility. And again, furthers your proof of concept. So I decided to gate crush Selfridge. I was in central London with my suitcase of clothes, and I went into Selfridge's head office, spoke to the receptionist, and said, hello, I'm here for a meeting with a buyer. I won't say the buyer's name. Said I'm here for a meeting with a buyer, found them on LinkedIn, knew their name. So the receptionist was like, okay, no problem at all. Printed me off a visitor's card, got on the phone to the buyer and said, Jake Posner from No One Sure Anything is here for his meeting. I was like, shit, that was a bit easy. Probably made a mistake doing this. I've still got the visitor's card here in my house, and then I've dated it. So I've dated it on November when I went there and how I went about it. So I've been sitting there for 25 minutes. I was on my phone. I was really nervous. Shit, is this okay to be doing? She's come down, she walked straight over to the receptionist. And she come back over to me and she's like, do we have a meeting? I'm like, no. I was in the area and I really am trying hard with my pieces. And I feel that they're living up to what Selfridges want to show within their store in circularity and sustainability and your projects and campaigns. I want to show you what I'm doing. She's like, look, I'm really busy. We're going out. I'm just going out to lunch. We've got 15 minutes. We've got the CEO here today. Do you have a business card? I was like, yeah, I've got a business card. I didn't have a business card. I made out like it was in the bottom of my suitcase. So as I was looking for my business card, I was putting out my pieces. I was giving it to her. Oh, do you like this? And she was like, I'm so busy. Can I give you my email address? Send me an email. I was like, okay, fine. Packed my pieces back up. And it turned out that I went there on the Tuesday. It turned out on the Thursday, the sale just been sold to their new Thai investors, Thai owners. So she wasn't actually sort of lying to me to get me out of the building. And we've been in touch ever since. While I'm still trying to work and getting into Selfridges, it was just an experiment I feel was worthwhile doing. And instead of just sitting behind a computer and sending emails, it was a more proactive way of doing things. I love doing things like that.
Jake, with that kind of approach, you're going to end up hitting a jackpot, hitting a win, aren't you? Isn't it interesting how many people with dyslexia, often the standard approach is locked out for them.
Yeah.
They're locked out of the standard approach. And so they have to find an alternate route. And you're just using alternate routes to get in. It's going to be fascinating to look back on this, Jake, in 5 years, 10 years time, and to see this as a sort of origin story narrative that this is where I was at. It's going to be interesting to hear what's going to happen.
Yeah, and it's part of building a story narrative as well, Adrian. So I can go back and tell a story and go back and document these things and say how hopefully the brand became something great. But at the same time, I've got that sort of no choice as well. So it's get out there, do something different, because I don't have that full-time job and that secure income every month. I have to nail this brand. Otherwise, God knows what's going to happen. I'm not going to be able to pay my rent. My girlfriend will be stressed. I don't want her to be stressed. I have to make sure that I'm in a position of being able to survive.
Yeah.
So that's another big part of why I'm doing what I need to do. Not necessarily because I have a lot of front or no shame. It's where I'm at in my life. And that's a big driving force.
Yeah, you just have to get out there and do it. Have you got a piece there you can show us that you're proud of? Well,
proud
of them all.
Yeah, I'm proud of them all. One second. Like I was saying, my denim jacket is my hero piece, just for how it's made. It's taken me a year. It's taken me since January to get this completed. It's still not even ready to buy. It will be available sort of end of the month. But this is the piece that's been designed with eFlow and 100% organic cotton denim. What we've also done is we've also distressed the seams on the arm by hand. So when you distress denim, you use a lot of chemicals and water. And we didn't want to do that. So we've put an extra seam in the arm. And then we plucked that out individually to distress that, which gives the piece a really unique look. And then you've got the logo on the top, in the, on the neck and in the shoulder blades.
I like it. Yeah.
Thank you. So that's been I've hand drawn that onto here. I'm using a method called a DTF print, which is directive fill. That saves 60% white ink and 40% colour ink. So it's much kinder to the environment and water supplies. My logo represents the five brand pillars, which is sustainability, innovation, creativity, storytelling, community. So that's what the logo represents. And that's some things I'm really passionate about and bringing that to the forefront of my brand. Then you've got the debut down there, which has been handwritten by myself. So that's my own handwriting. So like I mentioned, it's got the hyphens in between the B and the U to reflect Lexi and breaking down the syllables. Yeah. So that's why that's that. And then inside we've got a print. The print inside here, because it's the final prototype, isn't quite correct, but I'll show it to you anyway. It should go the other way around. And instead of saying what it says, it just says F. I mean, that print's wrong, but inside it says fuck fast fashion. But it will say F fast fashion because I didn't want of anyone by having a swear word in there. And it will also come from left to right. And the text will be slightly different too. More in the style of what it says on the back in the debut print.
And what are you retailing them for, Jake?
That jacket retails for £400.
Okay. Great. Let's look back, and just one of the things that I often ask people in the podcast is what advice they would give to their younger self from what you've learned. If you could go back in time, what time would you choose in your life to get a little bit of input from the older you? And what advice would you give to yourself, do you think?
I think my early 20s. I think I got kind of lost track of where I wanted to be and what I actually wanted to achieve. You touched on the husband, my family business. I was doing a lot of work, and I felt while I was putting in my heart and soul to being able to try to carry building that business, it wasn't scratching my itch. It wasn't fulfilling my ambition or my desire, what I really wanted to achieve. And it was making me feel a bit isolated. It didn't give me confidence. I didn't feel happy because I felt like I had a bit more to share, a bit more to offer. And I think that the dyslexia as well, I wasn't able to feel creative. I wasn't able to show what I believe is my dyslexic traits of storytelling and being able to be creative. And I think going back to my early 20s, it's only in the last 2 years or so that I felt a lot more confident in what I'm doing, and that's since starting this brand. So I think that if you have a passion and you feel that you can really make it work, and it's something that you believe in, I'd honestly say try your best to find a way to go for it, because I think that it will change your life. It will allow you to come onto a podcast with yourself, which back in my early 20s, I'll never have come on a podcast. Number one, because I wouldn't feel confident. And number two, I didn't know how much I would have to offer someone. And that, for me, is something that I found really difficult. Like my friend that I used to do a lot of DJing with, who's a couple of years older than me, he's got a great brand. And I'd watch his success and his journey. He hasn't had it easy either. I won't go into his story, but he's a great person to look up to because he's always been older than me. So I've always looked up to him. And I've looked what he's achieved and where he came from and his story, and inspired me.
Explain to me the name of your brand. What's it called?
It's called No One True Anything.
What does that mean? No One True Anything.
When you first hear it, it doesn't quite make sense. And that's what it's made not to do because of dyslexia. The slogan is no one sense made, nonsense. So it's non with a forward slash and then sense. So it's essentially nonsense, but broken down into nonsense. And if you dig a bit deeper into the brand, it's also about finding your own perspective within the world and the way things work. We're fed stuff through the media, mainstream media, the news, the internet, whatever it might be. But it's, can you find your own way of determining how that happened? Why that happened? For me, the most recent one is the oil situation, about how, don't get me wrong, I'm all for businesses making money. I think that it's great. But I feel like companies like BP, who've had billions and billions of pounds of profit made over the past year or so, they're, in my opinion, exploiting people. They weren't paying more for wholesale oil or wholesale petrol, but they were selling it to the end consumer for such a big markup that was putting strain and stresses on family and families. So for me, No One True Anything is about finding your own perspective about how things are coming across, that ulterior motive. And I've always looked at the world like that, I think, and always tried to find a different way of looking at things.
That's great. Any kind of final words, Jake? One of the things I often ask people is, what advice would you give to parents that are out there? Any thoughts from your journey that you would give to parents who have got children with dyslexia?
Yeah, I think support them. Don't pressure them into revising constantly. While it's important to achieve exams and get the qualifications, if they can't necessarily sit, concentrate, read a book, make notes, memorize it, and go into an exam and smash out an exam, maybe don't pressurize them, let them in their own journey, give them a bit of breathing space. So if they want to go and revise and study hard, amazing. My sister's also dyslexic and she has gone on to uni. She is currently doing her degree. And that's amazing. Like, I spoke to her yesterday. I tried to call her and she's, I'm in the library revising, I'll call you later. Amazing. Like, I love that. That inspires me because I was that kind of person. Couldn't do that. So if you're a dyslexic child or if you are dyslexic and you're listening to this, great, go and revise. But if you're also not of that at all, but you can draw or you can tell a story, embrace it and try and find your own way, because I don't think the exams are the be all and end all. I don't think that the education system is built for everyone. I think that the education system needs to be redesigned, looked at for certain people with neurodivergence within the school setting. So I really think explore and a lot of, I think, free reign and self-discovery is really important.
What tech do you have in your toolkit when it comes to helping you get stuff done in the world?
I rely a lot on Spellcheck and the sort of style of Spellcheck that comes with my Outlook email. And I also put in my email signature now that I am dyslexic. So I say Jake Pauls in the bracket dyslexic, because I don't want to give people the opinion that I haven't put time and thought and effort into making sure that my email is well thought out and well found and well spelled. So I don't really rely necessarily on too much tech from a spelling perspective, because I think that if I do, it takes away that authenticity of how I'm trying to, how I come across and my brand being formulated around dyslexia. I use my iPad a lot. I find that my writing is quite unneat. I never got my pen license at school. Being a kid, at school you get your pen license. I'm also left-handed, so I'd smudge a lot of my ink as well. But being able to write and draw on an iPad is a complete game changer. I use something called Procreate for my design.
Love it. It's great.
Yeah. Procreate is an absolute game changer. It's an amazing bit of amazing bit of software. It's not even expensive. I think it's $8.99 and you have unlimited access to the whole, it's the whole thing. And Procreate is amazing. I do all my design work on Procreate and then I transfer the files into vector format and put them onto Photoshop or Illustrator so that I can send them to the manufacturers. But other than that, I don't really use them.
Great. Interesting, because I help people with workplace strategy coaching. And one of the things as part of the Access to Work scheme in the UK, and also Americans who pay for it privately, and one of the things that I recommend they do is get an iPad. And many of them are now getting an iPad and pen supplied to them by the government.
Amazing.
And paid for, and then also training on how to use the iPad. Because what's interesting is a lot of people with dyslexia, I've noticed, is that you need to do something physical to process the information. And just handwriting, even if your handwriting's messy, or drawing or sketching or doodling, helps you process the information. But in this digital world, where if you're handwriting on paper, which is great, I love it, sometimes you need things all in one place so you can search through them, flick through them, find them when you need them, rather than a piece of paper shoved in a book on a bookshelf somewhere in your bedroom while you're in your office or whatever. It's all on one device. And I found personally the iPad has filled that gap that is between the phone and the computer, where it's actually filled the creativity gap, because I'm creative on my iPad in that I mind map my thoughts and plans and projects and draw out plans and strategies and things like that. But then when I'm on my laptop, I'm just typing and clicking through emails and doing all the admin-y stuff. So I've seen this real separation between laptop and iPad. iPad becomes the realm of creative thought and strategy, and computer becomes the realm of low-grade admin.
Going back to when I would make music, can make music on digitally, like on a computer, I use a software called Logic, which again is an app. I'm sure lots of people are familiar with it. And everything could be done within that software. You could open something called UltraBeat and you could program your drums, and you could open an ESX24, which is a sampler. But I couldn't work like that. I needed something physical. I spent a lot of money on having hardware to be able to do things physically, press buttons and play instruments and do all this different stuff, which is what you're saying with the iPad. It just completely changes how we're learning and how we're creating things, which is a great way forward.
Yeah. If anyone's listening, I highly recommend getting yourself an up-to-date iPad, something that is younger than 2 years old, because then it can accept the Apple Pencil and you can then start opening up this realm of being able to draw on a digital device, which is also fascinating. In terms with dyslexia, often you go through much more iterations of design. How do you find it? Because like you do a drawing and you think, yeah, that's okay, it's a bit messy. And then you do another layer and you draw over the top of that. And then you do another layer and you disappear the layers below and you start seeing this progression rather than page after page and erasing things and so on. How do you do your workflow with that kind of process?
So what I do is I will always draw the basic outline of the hoodie and I would duplicate. So I didn't have to draw it over and over again. I'll duplicate it about 4 or 5 times so that I've just got those outlines. And what I do is I then start to design that hoodie, but I will create the first design and I'll leave it for about an hour or two and I'll come back and I'll look at it and I'll analyze about where I can improve it. So then I'll go on to the second duplicate of that hoodie outline, like very much like what you're saying, go on to that second design and then reformat it, rework it. And I'm very inspired by a designer, Virgil Abloh, if you're familiar with him and his work. He came up with a great brand called Off-White, went on to become the creative director of Louis Vuitton. Unfortunately, he died last year, very young. And while I didn't know him, when I heard the news that he died, I felt like I knew him, like he was that inspirational, a black guy who broke boundaries and really came into this fashion realm and changed everything. And he very much inspired me. And he always said, you can change and create something new by just changing 3% of something. So when I now design, I'm like, if I can change 3% of the initial design to improve it and give it a different look, then that's perfect. And then if I can then go on to the third concept of what I'm making and change that again by 3%. And it's always a constant 3% change.
Fascinating.
And honestly, if you have a chance, look up Virgil Abloh. He is an amazing person. I got goosebumps just by talking about him now. But yeah, he's a great inspirational person.
Jake, it's been great speaking to you. Have you got any final words, anything you'd like to share? And obviously what we'll do is, if you're listening and you're wanting to look at some of Jake's work, just swipe up on your podcast app and you'll see all the text appear, and we'll put the hyperlinks into the show notes there so you can click through to everything Jake. Okay. Any final words, Jake?
Thank you for having me and thank you for listening. And if anyone does want to get in touch with, you know, and any questions that maybe I can help with or whatever, just feel free to reach out, send me an email, drop me a WhatsApp. I think my number is actually on my Instagram. So if you press call, you'll get my number, just whatever. Don't care. Just, yeah, reach out. Happy to talk.
Great, Jake. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
See ya. Excellent. This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com. It's my day job when I'm not hosting this podcast. Tell me, do you know what you want to achieve in the workplace, but you're struggling with how to achieve it? Maybe you suspect some traits of dyslexia are getting in the way. Well, that's where Dyslexia Productivity Coaching comes in, because we give you a simple productivity system for your Apple devices that harnesses the creativity that comes with your dyslexia. It includes proven methods like note-taking, reminders, speech-to-text, mind mapping, and more, all tailored to your needs. It'll free up your time and help you achieve outstanding results. Book a complimentary call to discuss it with me, and if you do it soon, I may also be available to coach you personally via Zoom. So don't be shy, go to dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com or swipe up and book it now.